Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. It is Thursday night, January the 31st, the last day of the month. And if you're currently living in the city of Montreal, windy as all hell. My name is James, the guy that talks first. Joining me through the magic of Skype and the interweb, we've got Mr. K. Ross Reed somewhere.
Hello, sir. Also known as the man who chased his garbage can down the street for half an hour today.
Yeah,
it was on a really long street.
It was windy, man. Gusts of 110.
110 km.
That's 70 miles for those
down. Yeah, 70 miles. Joining him, I'm guessing on a chair in the office somewhere, we've got goalie Adam Owell.
Yeah, that would be me. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing pretty good. So everyone's back for the show tonight. One of you guys has the list of topics that I came up with. Strangely enough, I don't have them. So, K-Ross, what are we talking about tonight?
It's a good thing somebody knew we were doing a show here. We're going to take a look at our preseason predictions from a few weeks back, give ourselves the chance to edit and revise now that we are 10% of the way through this shortened NHL season. We're going to talk about PK Subban's contract status and the popularity contest he may or may not be losing in the Habs locker room. Patrick Marleau and the San Jose Sharks are red hot. It has been Shark Week across the NHL to get this season started, as it has been in the other Windy City this evening. We're going to talk about the Chicago Blackhawks and Corey Crawford and their red hot start to this season as well.
Who knew?
Who knew?
Funny fact about Chicago. Known as the Windy City, not because of the actual prevailing winds, but because of the amount of politicians that used to be there and the blowhardedness of their windy talk. Yeah.
More you know.
Facts.
Knowledge is power.
And knowing is
half
the battle.
Also got emails tonight from you, the listeners, so stay tuned for that. All that, probably a lot more making fun of Adam, but right now, it is time to go... game's over. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, you're fine.
All right, see you next week.
Off the crossbar. Sound effects tonight, so I want to use them.
Because you probably spell crossbar with a C instead of like a K like you should have.
No, it's got a K. Don't worry, it's right there, because I can also go. That's out of line, Adam. You got a 2-minute penalty. You're not.
2 minutes for being stupid.
Oh man, James had more than 15 minutes to prepare tonight. I feel like we're in for a long night of sound effects.
gonna be great, guys. You just wait. It's gonna be great. All right, so what do we want to start with? I say we start with PK. Why not?
PK.
Mister Nobody likes him.
Apparently,
that's a load of bollocks.
So the media would have us believe.
Yeah, so it seems. So as I would like to believe, that's for sure. All right, so PK is signed. K-Ross, you just recently wrote a piece about whether or not PK is poison, I believe it was.
That's correct.
So is he poison?
You know what? It's absolutely not. When you look at this situation, there's a lot of hype made about some comments that were made after a pregame skate the day that PK Subban signed his contract extension. Andrei Markov and Josh Georges both basically expressed some exasperation at the fact that they were constantly being asked questions about PK Subban while the team was riding a 4-game win streak at that point. Is PK a problem in the locker room? No. Is the problem more so that people can't seem to take their eyes off PK? I think that's maybe the issue, is that it's the distraction factor of not having him around more so than the attitude that he brings to the room, if you were to ask me about it.
Okay. Adam. You there?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with PK, man. I mean, he's a loud, boisterous guy. That's part of the reason that he's so appealing to the media and everything like that. He's never afraid to talk. But he's also a team player. He wasn't holding out. He wasn't doing anything untowards with it. As K-Ross says in his article, I mean, there are a whole bunch of factors surrounding it with the new CBA and working out contract stuff with that. There's nothing wrong with this guy. He was just doing his job. He couldn't play until he had a contract. He wasn't holding out. He just couldn't play. If you don't have a contract, you're not insured, you don't play. That's it. That's all. PK's the man. He's going to be with the Habs for a good long time to come. And everybody's got to stop reading into crap that is non-existent. It's ridiculous, man. It's just this town has way too much time on its hands in the media.
As one of those in the media in this city, yeah, we do have a lot of time on our hands, that's for sure. And I will totally admit, I put it in a sports/news report the other day that maybe perhaps some of his teammates ain't too stoked on the idea of necessarily him being back. Specifically, it was kind of I know it was after the pregame skate, and I know they were just kind of, you know, getting ready for that night's game and whatnot, but it was one of the things that just kind of the way that Josh Georges answered the questions for me, where I was like, maybe there is something to this.
You know, that's certainly the way the video looked, but it's really easy to cut that video that way. I'm certain that that was probably the 14th or 15th time Josh Georges had answered a question about DK Subban that day.
Probably.
So if you just start filming at that moment, when he finally does become exasperated, of course, it's going to look that way. And, I mean, let's face it, PK is a pretty distracting guy. And this is a very high-energy city when it comes to hockey coverage. So there is that element where you will hear more about the contract negotiations here than you will in other places. But to say that the team is upset with him or to say that he's not a team player irks me. Just because when you look at it, here's a guy who averaging 10.5 goals a year, 26.5 assists a season over the course of a fairly short career. But he's doing well. Like when you look at the comparables, I point out Erickson in Detroit makes $3.25 million. He's averaging 2.5 goals a year and 13 assists. I mean, literally half the assists, a fifth the goal production, and PK settled for a deal that pays him less than what Erickson is making. He's, at the end of the day, accepted the bridge contract. He's got a fair deal for a fair term at a fair price, and he'll make his money later on just like everyone expected. It took him a little bit longer to negotiate his deal because a brand new collective bargaining agreement is a complicated thing. But this is literally a non-story, in my opinion. PK Subban had a contract that expired. Then there was a lockout, and when it ended, he negotiated for a little while, took a fair deal, and will now rejoin the team.
Enough said.
Like, that's the bad guy side of PK that they're trying to play, is that he was selfish somehow in this situation. If he had acted selfish, I could believe that his teammates are upset with him. If he acts like a fair, reasonable human being, and then some of his teammates get annoyed at being questioned for 2 weeks about a guy who hasn't showed up yet, I'm willing to bet that's more media spin than fact.
Yeah.
Some of the stupid questions there, or some of the stupid things they're trying to read into, that, you know, some of his supposed friends on the team hadn't tweeted him to say, you know, good job on the contract. Do you tweet your friends happy birthday? I mean, yeah, sure, sometimes you may as well do it at the end of the day, but most of the time I call my buddy or maybe send them a text. But just because you're not proclaiming it to the world doesn't mean you're not getting a call from your friend saying, good for you, can't wait to see you back. Stupid. Well, what?
You never know. Maybe they're not happy.
Well, I also happen to have on very good information that Carey Price was seen downtown this past weekend with Josh Georges and PK Subban in tow, the four of them just basically hanging out at a restaurant, having a good time. That doesn't sound like the kind of thing you do with a guy you're angry at. You don't go outside the organization to have dinner with a guy who's hampering your team and being a pariah in your locker room.
Yeah, from the start of all this, despite the fact that I did admittingly report on it, I was more just kind of reporting on it because everybody else was. from my perspective, it more seemed like that Josh George's comment, if you look at it, the way that it's presented, it kind of sounds not too stoked on the return of
Pete. But exactly. The way it was presented. It was presented by the media who wants to make something out of nothing.
Dude, if you let me finish, it totally looks like that. But in reality, in the back of my mind, the whole time I watched that clip, I was like, yeah, he seems more like he's just kind of pissed off at that dude holding the camera and the microphone right now. There was a lot of those weird kind of reactions to everything, and I think it was all directed towards the people that were in that locker room that didn't have anything to do with that team. So, I don't know. This whole idea of PK being poison, it's stupid. I know he's had a run-in or two with guys on the team in the past, but lots of guys do that.
Yeah, and listen, I don't mean to say that PK is a saint and that he's going to be welcomed back with open arms by every single guy in the locker room. There may be some animosity. He's a guy who didn't show up so that he could get a little more money, but it's the kind of thing that really easily gets overlooked in professional sports.
But wait, what do you mean by didn't show up? He couldn't show up if he didn't have a contract. He can't practice.
Well, you're right. Okay, but that's but he could have just accepted whatever Bergevin put on the table and showed up.
But do we even know, like...
No, we have no idea, exactly. Because the Canadians don't negotiate publicly. But I can understand that there is an abrasive side to PK and that you may not want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's face it. Nobody in the NHL has fought Thomas Pulcanic. PK Subban has fought Thomas Pulcanic at practice. It's a fact. The guy brings a certain amount of energy, and when you get that, you're going to rub people the wrong way. But that's to say that he's not welcome back in his locker room, or to say that some of his teammates are not comfortable having him, you know, back into this chemistry, back into this fold, that's just such an outsider opinion. I mean, we've seen it happen. You guys, I believe, were both very aware of the fact that I've gotten into a scrap with one of the guys who plays for the Men with No Name during a Saturday night beer league hockey game 2.5 years ago.
I was there.
You dust these things off and you move along with yourself very quickly. That's what this sport is about. It's about high intensity, high emotion moments. PK needs to learn to control his peaks and valleys a little bit, sure, but he's just a young kid. The fact that he's such a prolific name already makes us think that he's a little older than he is, but realistically, he's just a kid in the locker room who's got some learning to do. Of course, some of the veterans are going to be upset with him here and there, but no way is he a pariah in that room. No way is he a poison on this organization.
Yeah,
he's too high energy and he's too much positive influence.
At most, I think there's going to be some resentment from guys who are like, oh, well, you know, the kid sat out because he wanted the big payday sort of thing, and it put us through this sort of thing. I could see that happening where it's like, hey, you know what, next time, don't be so, I don't want to say selfish because, you know, he's not technically being selfish and whatnot, but yeah, like, it put the team through a weird situation because.
But that, again, that was nothing to do with him. That was just the situation.
That is just bad timing. This is a contract that would have been settled very quietly over the course of the summer were it not for the lockout. This deal would have been done in August. It would have been probably the same dollar and the same term, and everyone would have stood up and golf clapped politely and said, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and so, like, just the situation and all kind of put the guys on the team in an awkward situation, and yeah, they might just be like, oh, you know, there might be a hard feeling here and there.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing like he's poisoned to the room or anything.
No, mild annoyance, and then he'll get back in, he'll play some stupid song on the ghetto blaster in the locker room, they'll all laugh at him, and they'll be right back to normal. That's how teams work.
That's pretty much exactly what's going to happen. Mild resentment at most.
Absolutely, and not anything beyond exceptionally temporary.
Yeah, and it's going to be a mild annoyance sort of thing, but it's going to be less at PK, more at, like, the situation that they were put in, and it just, they're going to have to direct a little bit of that annoyance towards PK and be like, hey, you know, thanks for all of that, you know. Thanks for the 45 million questions that I had to answer on your contract status.
Yeah, while you were doing the weather.
Yeah. You know, like, maybe some guys will look at it that way, you know. Like,
you know, Diaz might be ticked off. If that's about it. Rafael Diaz may be a little ticked off.
He's got the most to lose if PK comes back strong.
Well, he's leading the team in scoring right now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's going to lose that spot with Andre Markov in the number one power play unit, presumably.
Most likely. But at this point, I just put him on the second power play. Why fix something that why try and fix something that isn't broken?
Well, but his leash just got a little shorter. Let's put it that way. I would personally keep Markov and Diaz together. I like that. And I would have Cabrelet and PK on the second power play unit.
Well, yeah, that gives you two pretty good options from the point.
That gives you 1A and 1B.
Exactly. So I don't think Diaz necessarily has a super short leash. Not as much as I feel like other moments in Canadian history, like when Halak was on super short leashes with Price in the background sort of thing. I don't think he's going to have that short a leash.
No, nobody has that short a leash.
No, that was a super short leash, like twist tie length. But, yeah.
He did well with it, though.
He did.
I mean, for a twist tie's length, he sure made a playoff run out of it.
He took it and ran, is what he did. But unless Diaz really falters, you got to stick with those two guys. They're doing a pretty good job.
Pretty good, yeah.
Except last night.
Well, no, see,
they had plenty of opportunity last night, and they couldn't do a damn thing on the power play.
Last night, they ran into Craig Anderson, who is easily right now one of the best goalies in the league.
Yeah, they did. They got outplayed over the course of last night's game, but in facing that Ottawa Senators team, you're exactly right, James. There were several key points where a goal would have completely switched momentum in Montreal's favor. And Craig Anderson pulled
two
pucks out of the net that he had no business pulling out of the net last night.
Craig Anderson has not let in a goal in the second, third, or overtime periods of the season.
That's crazy. Crazy. Well, I mean, it's what, 5 goals allowed in 6 games or 6 goals allowed in 6 games?
I don't remember exactly what it is, but he's under 1.
That's, yeah, goals against less than 1. It's 0.99 right now, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And
13 goals
on the Montreal side, I think there was a clear distinction between starting and backup goaltenders.
stupid Flanders.
I didn't watch the game. I saw some of the highlights. Not impressed with Budaj's.
But again, the guy has been sitting on the bench for the first 6 games or 5 games of the season, right? So, I mean, he's the backup goalie to start with. I mean, you can't all have a St. Louis or a Vancouver in a good day situation. And what do you expect from your backup goalie? I mean, you want him to be able to play better than that. But coming out of doing nothing except practicing a few times a season, it's not shocking.
It's really difficult in this shortened season, I think, to play, particularly as a backup goaltender, coming in cold for a team that's played back-to-back games. I mean, that's difficult. It's hard enough to come in and to sort of try to find your groove when every game means so much right now, let alone when the legs in front of you are missing. Even a quarter step is a huge difference at that level of hockey. We're talking about National Hockey League. You know, guys that have played 24 hours before in a different city, if you lose 1 or 2 foot races in the first period, you can suddenly lose the entire dynamic of a game.
Oh, for sure. And from what I saw in the highlights, like, keep in mind, I did not watch the game, but from what I saw in the highlights, it didn't really look like Montreal was in that game outside of the first period.
No,
they got tired fast and didn't do much after that. I mean, yeah. Anderson's got a .99 goals against average, for God's sake. Like, that's impressive. I mean, no, it's only been 5 games, but still, he's good this year and last year, too. I mean, he's going to give him a run for money. Vezina?
It's too early to say.
Whoa.
It really is. It's to start giving out trophies based on performance so far, I'm still giving out trophies based on gut feeling.
So what's your gut say?
My gut says Craig Anderson does not win the Vezina.
Who does?
If I had to guess, I'm gonna go straight back to who was, in my opinion, the guy who peaked the highest last year, and that's John Quick. I really feel like Sutter's going to turn around that LA team. I feel like that defense is going to tighten up in front of him once they get their chemistry together, just like the second half of last season. And once that happens, he's proven himself. I think that back is going to heal up. He's going to be just fine. Once that injury heals up and the team tightens up in front of him, yeah, he'll get a Vezina. Maybe not this year, but if I was cutting odds, he's my favorite right now.
Okay. Well, yeah.
I don't know. Right. Again, clearly not based on performance thus far. Clearly based on just my gut. Like, if that's, you want to know what my gut tells me? I'll take the guy who was holding the Stanley Cup over his head 7 months ago.
Yeah. I don't know. Corey Crawford for Vezina sounds really good.
Corey Crawford for 5 or 6 decent games and then the wheels fall off sounds like a story I've heard before, though.
Maybe it'll be your buddy Antti Niemi, huh?
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Your heroes, the Sharks, they're doing pretty well, AJ.
They are doing pretty well.
You like them apples.
And actually, guys, if you want to know a dark horse, I'll tell you right now, Anders Lindbäck.
Really?
You want a dark horse for the Vezina?
Good.
Check out that start in Tampa Bay. I look like a genius calling them on that division.
That's a good starter down there. When we get to our, I want to redo my preseason predictions. I got to remember that division.
Oh, you had Carolina as your dark horse down there, didn't you, James?
I did.
They're
pretty dark right now.
Yeah, they are. My dark horse for the Vezina this year, Devan Dubnyk.
Any chance you remember my picks? Because I don't.
I don't remember your picks at all.
Oh, well, I'll make them up again.
I don't listen half the time when you talk.
I know.
Devan Dubnyk.
I like taking Dubnyk as the dark horse because he has shown flashes of brilliance so far this year. He doesn't have quite the numbers, but his moments have been spectacular.
Hey, for a guy who let in 6 goals in 1 period of hockey, a 2.75 goals against and a .916 save percentage, it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's my point. The numbers don't necessarily reflect how good he is.
Yeah. What was it? That game against L.A. was a nice game.
Yeah, that was actually.
He had a good one there. Last night against Phoenix, really good game there too.
The Phoenix stuff. The Phoenix Coyotes.
Oh, boy. We're going to get into Phoenix a little bit later too. So, yeah, let's...
If they're still around by the time we end this show...
Let's talk about our friends in San Jose, shall we?
You have friends in San Jose.
Yeah, apparently.
This is news to me.
Your hero, Patrick Marleau.
Patrick Marleau. Okay, so Patrick Marleau is...
9 goals, 5 assists, 14 points, and a +5.
Doing pretty good, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And you talk about a way to start a season. No player has ever been the first star for the first 4 games of a team's season before.
Oh, by the way, the Devan Dubnyk game against Colorado. Also, fantastic. 37 saves that game. Oh, man. Like, literally, the Oilers had no business winning that game. He actually won them that game. That and a couple power plays.
And that's where the consistency over this condensed schedule is going to come in, I think.
Yeah.
Can he hold up when he has to make 37 stops on some nights, as he will on several occasions this season, guaranteed, to get Edmonton into the playoff picture?
Well, so far through the first 6 games of the season, dude gets called on a lot.
Well, sure, but through the first 6 games of the season, Joe Thornton's on pace for 100 assists in 48 games.
Yeah, but it's not just Joe Thornton that they're playing against every night. They're playing against them tonight, but that's the whole of the story.
That is true.
San Jose Sharks doing pretty good right now. 6-0-0, 26 goals for, 10 against.
Whew.
Hell, man.
I mean, Patrick Marleau is single-handedly outscoring a couple teams in the league.
Is he still, though? Because he's at what? He's at
9.
9-5.
I think every team is at 10 at least.
Are they? Oh, okay. Well, yeah. There you go.
Every team has gotten to 10, but the Sharks haven't played, I feel like, in like 2 days.
Yeah, they've had some time off.
Depending on how good or bad the Oilers do tonight, he could end up outscoring several teams in the league tonight.
That's crazy. I did some homework on this, and I discovered that Patrick Marleau is the first player since Cy Denneny in 1917 to start a season with 4 consecutive multi-goal games. That's pretty good.
That is pretty crazy.
Not bad.
not bad at all.
I mean, and it's one thing to see these guys early in the season. You often see it through the first week. You know, someone comes out and has themselves a Lars Eller or a Sam Gagne of a game, and they'll put up these ridiculous point totals and sort of be in the running for a while. But what's impressed me most about Marlowe is the consistency. You're looking at two goals, two goals, two goals, two goals, one goal. This isn't like one offensive flurry or one, you know, goaltender whose number he had on one particular evening. He's really bringing his A game on a nightly basis.
Yeah, for sure. But again, it's San Jose.
Yeah, I know, but still. This isn't...
I physically have been here before.
These ain't your grandpa's Sharks, James. This is a power play that's clicking along at 35.3%. They're 12 for 34. That is deadly.
Well, if we want to talk about power plays...
We can talk about one that's almost as good in Edmonton?
Let's go back to Edmonton. They have at least one power play goal every game.
Sure, but they're currently sitting second to the San Jose Sharks in power play percentage.
Are they?
They are.
Oh, yeah, no, because the last night in Phoenix, they really sucked it up on that power play, except for overtime. But, you know, that's a different story. It'll be interesting to see tonight, especially because the last game against San Jose was really, San Jose just made them look bad. I haven't watched two San Jose games this year. I obviously watched that one.
Anytime you give up a field goal on both of the opening drives, you're just in for a long night.
It was just bad. Like it seemed that they realized, oh, hey, we know exactly how to play against the Edmonton Oilers, and it's just don't let them touch the puck. Because that's what they did for the first 20 minutes of that game. It was incredible.
That's what you, especially that early in the season, there's a lot of nerves on that young Edmonton team, and there's a lot of seasoned vets over on that San Jose team. You have to assume that just simply playing in front of a home crowd and having those extra butterflies, especially the way that the game broke down early, was probably the deciding factor there.
Yeah. And
we've seen that Edmonton's got the talent to run and gun.
Oh, they definitely do, although sometimes you'd be shocked that they actually can do that, watching them play sometimes.
Or stand and bat, in Yakupov's case, I suppose, more than run and gun.
Last night wasn't out of the air, for the record. That was on the ice when he actually made contact with it.
First bounce?
Hey, Lars Eller tipped one in from about 9 feet up last night. It was pretty impressive.
9 feet up, that's a little high.
Yeah, oh yeah, it was immediately called off, but he put his hands up because, well, you got to, but he knew it wasn't going to be a goal. It was pretty funny, though. Maybe not 9 feet up, but well over.
Don't think he's tall enough to get up that high, is he?
Reaching with his stick?
Yeah. I thought Lars Eller is like 4 foot.
I'm talking David.
No, Eller's like 6'2", man.
Is he?
Yeah, Eller's a big guy.
Man, he looks so tiny.
You sure you're not thinking of Desharnais number 51?
Are you thinking of the right guy? The guy I'm thinking of kind of looks like a Viking.
Really?
His name is Lars, dude.
I know that.
There are no small people named Lars or Thor anywhere in the world.
That's true. This is the exception.
It's like meeting a petite Helga. They're not out there.
No. How about penalty killing? Boston, Chicago, and the Islanders are all up over 95% on the PK. Not bad.
Yeah, you like that. That's a sign of good coaching most of the time, unless you're a New York Islander, in which case that's probably just a sign of luck.
So what do you guys think of San Jose? Can they do it this year?
No. I'm going to... If they were ever going to do it...
Games are the indicator.
This seems to be the year. I know that they're very top-heavy in their scoring. You look at the way that it's broken down. It's pretty much all coming from that top line right now. Hanzus hasn't been great sitting in that third-line role. But they've got the depth in their lineup that once they get that secondary scoring rolling and they really find that sink, they're as good as they really ever could be. When you look at, I think, probably the most telling stat, you know, we talk about the two top teams in hockey right now. Obviously, you go to San Jose and you go to Chicago with the best record. San Jose is scoring 4.17 goals per game. They're allowing 1.67. Chicago is only scoring 3.4, and they're allowing 2.14. So you're talking about a half goal difference in either direction compared to the next best team in the National Hockey League. San Jose is really firing on all cylinders right now, and I think if you're looking from the first six games, there's really no reason to say that no, they can't do it. Defensively, offensively, and they're getting the goaltending. We know they're well coached. Why not, right? It's been a hot pick for the last 8 years to take the Sharks. I'm not saying I'm taking them, but could they do it? Yeah, they really could.
I will agree with you. If there's one year that they're going to, it would be this year. But logic for me has to prevail that they're still the San Jose Sharks.
I love that all of the numbers point you towards something, but then logic is what takes you away from it.
Yep. The logic in the fact that the team is still called the San Jose Sharks.
In James's world, I don't like people who wear teal as logic.
And they are still led by Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton.
And Joe Thornton is the best ever second best player on a team who never had a first best player.
However you want to put Joe Thornton, he feels to me like the kind of guy that's going to go his entire career and never get it.
He seems to me like the kind of guy who's going to eventually come to his senses, find a way to get onto a team with Alex Ovechkin, and have the guy who can't stop passing and the guy who can't stop shooting finally team up.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, that did not work with Gretzky and Hall.
No, it didn't.
It did work very well with Hall and Oates.
Yes, it did.
And Gretzky and everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that it did.
Crazy that it worked for Bernie Nichols, but not for Brett Hall, huh?
Yeah, but hey, you know what? Your prediction of Scott Gomez being a 30-goal scorer this year might come true.
Hey, I didn't say he'd be a 30-goal scorer.
Yeah, you did.
I think he did.
Did I?
It may have been an ironic kind of ha-ha sort of thing.
No. That was
No, you're right. We did. We were taking the long shot stuff, and I said, you know what? And you know what? He could do it. He could do it. Wouldn't it be awesome if somebody on the Montreal payroll were to win a Stanley Cup?
I'd love that. Except he's in San Jose. So if he gets traded from San Jose to somebody else and then wins the Stanley Cup, totally cool with that. But
wouldn't that be a great steal for San Jose, though? Sign him up for nothing and then trade him for an actual commodity?
Yeah. That'd be fantastic.
When we couldn't? We being myself and the, you know, off-malign Mark Bergevin, who I'm often on the phone with during these complex negotiations.
There's a big difference in trading a $7 million cap hit and a $700,000 cap hit.
Not next year when there seems to need to scrape up to the bottom again.
Yeah, that's true. But, so the general consensus right now, San Jose, yay or nay?
80% yay.
63.5% nay.
I'm going to go 100% nay.
Yeah, right, we'd expect nothing less.
Surprise, surprise, eh?
So they're 6-0. They've got the two leading scorers in the league. They're setting records left, right, and center. Power play is the best in the league. Penalty kills top five. James thinks absolutely 100% no.
Nope.
Well, I mean, he is using
history as
an indicator.
They're going to be the Detroit Red Wings of 1995. They're going to be pretty much the best team in the league, get all the way to that Stanley Cup final, and lose to the New Jersey Devils.
Again, eh?
That's how it's going to work. I'm telling you. Watch out for them Devils this year. They're going all the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to see Tampa do it, though. Oh, man, I'd like to see Tampa do it.
That would be very exciting.
That'd be fantastic.
That massive goaltender.
I would just like to see Tampa do it so that everybody knows that Steve Yzerman is probably, like, the best GM in the league right now.
I've been saying that for the last two off seasons, watching the moves he's making.
True, he has. I've had to listen to it. He's like, God damn, that Stevie Y is amazing.
I still don't know what he's going to do with those 150 defensemen. I think he's building an army or something down there.
Well, I think if he, like, human centipedes them all together, you could
awful.
Get a pretty big D guy back there.
Right. January 31st, 8:34 p.m., the moment James went too far.
Yeah, that's gross, dude.
Well, I don't know how else to...
Maybe if it was Gary Bettman, human centipede to himself.
Hey, Gary Bettman's 20-year anniversary, I believe, coming up soon.
Wow, just, celebrating mediocrity in all ways.
He's going to celebrate by not finding an owner for the Phoenix Coyotes.
All right.
Like you've been doing for 20 years.
I'll put up $100 towards the Coyotes.
You brought up the Coyotes again. Clearly, you'd like to talk about it.
I don't need to talk about it. I need to mention the asinine nature of this situation. I need to point out the fact that we just missed a half season of hockey because hockey is suffering, apparently because the players are getting paid too much, and not because the league makes bad decisions. Oh, and by the way, that only franchise that the team owns that he keeps burying money into that is finally supposed to have a deal, it doesn't. And it's going to keep bleeding money for a very long time.
Forever, ever?
Gary's got to be in there for 20 years with the business investments he's got. He's looking for a 20 to 25-year deal in the city of Arizona that keeps voting to shut him out. This is... Just to think of all that finger-pointing that went on at the players, saying they're the reason that this game is suffering. Their salaries are the reason this game is suffering. When you've got a franchise out there that's being owned by the other 30 franchises in a direct conflict of interest, and it's just bleeding money. Irks me. Irks me.
Yep, Uncle Gary's got to go.
You know who I feel bad for in all this?
Who do you feel bad for?
Shane Doan.
Yeah, absolutely. He got the hose. He signed that deal on the understanding that there was finally a solid ownership deal in place.
Yeah, because I honestly don't think he... If he knew from the start ownership was not in place and it wasn't going to happen, like we all speculated to begin with...
He'd be a Winnipeg Jet.
He'd be somewhere else, yeah.
Or a New York Ranger.
Or whoever was willing to pay him.
Which is anybody, because he'd be a hell of an asset on any team.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, like... I kind of like him less and less every time I see him, but I...
Him with Doan or Bettman?
Doan.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
He really complains a lot.
Wouldn't you?
He's been playing hockey in Phoenix for 15 years.
But not... He doesn't necessarily complain about that situation. Like, he's always bitching at a ref. He's always, you know, I don't know. Everybody gets on Crosby's case for doing it, but nobody gets on Doan's case.
Because Doan's grown up. He can complain. He's been around long enough to know what's good and what's not. Crosby just cries because Crosby was told forever that no one can touch you, Sidney, because you are the future. One ring to rule them all and all that jazz. He's frustrated and angry about being hosed repeatedly by Phoenix and the NHL and blah, 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 blah. You know, great hockey player, good long career, done all sorts of good, and getting crapped on. So who do you take it out on? The refs. Why not? Most of the time, they're wrong anyway.
That might be the worst justification I've ever heard. I don't like Crosby because he used good when he was young, and I'm okay it because Shane Doan is old and scrappy.
No, Crosby, I don't have any problem with Crosby being good. I just have a problem with Crosby expecting nobody to be allowed to come near him because he's good.
He doesn't expect
you're
that
good? Get away. Yeah, that's why he cries to the refs, man.
No
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
Every young player in the league cries to the refs. Every young player in our beer league cries to the refs. The only difference is the camera's always on Sid. And now that he's older, it doesn't do it anymore. He's still having a hard time shaking that
reputation. He still absolutely does do it now. Yes.
No more than anybody else in the league. Absolutely not. And the fact is, clearly guys have no problem with touching him. He's gotten his bell rung on many an occasion.
I'm glad you elaborated further.
Yeah, it was a little creepy. But yeah, just the more and more that I see Shane Doan, the more, like, just less and less I like him. But I still feel bad for the guy, because he shouldn't be there right now. He should be somewhere else.
Not even supposed to be here today.
Exactly. He was one day off of retirement.
Too old for this.
Consider a position in the Gloverment when he's done.
Yes, the Gloverment going back to season one.
8:40 right now. You're currently listening to Off the Crossbar Live. My name is James, joined by K. Ross Reed. We got Adam O. Wells somewhere over there as well.
Right.
As always, by our good friends at BackSportsPage.com. You can find us within the whole Back Sports Page radio network, whatever you want to call it. There's some really awesome shows. I can't say enough good things about Foul Territory. Always entertaining. Go check out that show if you ever get the chance.
Very true.
But right now at 8:40, because I have all of my sound effects ready and together, Adam, there's some hockey going on tonight.
Indeed there is, James.
And
what was that, buddy?
Time for a live look-in.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. We got Boston and Buffalo notched up at 3 at the end of the second. Washington is leading Toronto 2-1 with just under 4 minutes to go in the second. With a minute to go in the second, the Islanders and the Devils are tied up at 3. Pittsburgh is leading the Rangers with 3 minutes to go in the second, 1-0. And St. Louis is up over Columbus 3-1. Winnipeg and Florida are tied at 0 a couple minutes into the second. And the rest of the games, Calgary hosting Colorado, Nashville at Los Angeles, and Edmonton at San Jose are yet to have started.
Awesome stuff. Good job.
Yeah, well done. I like how you pulled that report into that clown car, too.
Man, I am not liking the fact that every time I play a sound effect on this thing, my program crashes. Oh, well. Corey Crawford and the Chicago Blackhawks. Dude's been pretty good so far this year.
You can say that.
What's up with that?
What is up with that?
That's the team in front of him.
I mean, I totally said at the beginning of the year, if Chicago can get a goalie, they'll run away with it all. Maybe they had their goalie the whole time. I don't know. Because he's looking pretty damn good.
Yeah, he's looking pretty good.
Well, he's currently ranked 8th in the league with a 179 goals against average, and that's in 6 games. A 931 save percentage. Yeah, he's doing great, man. I mean, yeah, he does have a great team in front of him, but he's also playing good hockey. How many shots has he faced? 3,000, I think, something like that. Okay, that was a slight exaggeration. 159 shots on him. I mean, he's playing good hockey.
Yeah, like, he's not... I don't think he'll ever be number one in this, number one in that. But the key right now is dudes making the big saves when needed.
Yeah, that's definitely a fair assessment.
I feel like last year definitely didn't have that going on. This year, though, if you guys saw any of the game last night in Minnesota, man, he was making some spectacular saves to keep the Blackhawks actually in that game and allow them the chance to go into overtime. Ultimately, yeah, losing in a shootout because I believe Patrick Sharp put it off a crossbar or something like that. On his go around of it. But yeah, no. Crawford making them saves when it counted, and honestly, I feel like for the Blackhawks, that's all they need and they'll do the rest.
Yeah, they certainly seem to have the offense up front right now. A lot of Blackhawks sitting in the top 10 scoring. And with a Quenneville coach team, that's system hockey at its finest. If you can get the kind of talent that the Chicago Blackhawks have among their forward ranks to buy into that system, you're going to end up with some spectacular results. If you can get guys like Marian Hossa back-checking, obviously you've got Taves, you've got Kane. There's a lot of depth there. And if you can get those guys buying into the same system and onto the same page, you're just going to need, like you said, James, your goaltender's going to need to come up and make the big saves. And at key points. But beyond that, he's not going to have to steal a whole lot of games like he did last night in Minnesota.
Yeah, like you're not going to run into a situation where Corey Crawford needs to keep his team in it like Dubnyk's going to have to do in Edmonton, or I don't want to necessarily say Carey Price here in Montreal, but I do sometimes get the feeling Price is going to have to stand on his head for the Canadiens to really do a good, meaningful amount this year. We could name a bunch of teams around the league where the goalies are going to have to stand on their head just to give their team a fair shot. Chicago, that's not the case. They have a hell of a front of them.
And last year, it's pretty much the same team, if I'm not mistaken. They haven't made too many changes to their lineup. It was literally just they needed a goalie to make a save. That's all they needed, and they couldn't get that between Crawford or Emery last year whatsoever. If he can make enough saves to hold the other team to 2-3 goals a night, he's given his team the chance they need to win.
You could say that of any goalie, I would imagine. I mean, any goalie with enough offense in front of him.
About any goalie, because not every team has the ability to score 3-4 goals every game.
Yeah, that's
our
right.
Blackhawks can totally do that.
Yeah, that's. I mean, there's just too many. When you've got a guy like Victor Stahlberg sitting on your third line.
Who's Brandon Saad?
I don't know, but I think it's hilarious that the guy who's sitting dead last in team scoring, his name is Saad. All alone at the bottom of the list. Zeros across the board.
Pretty good.
I play on a line with Taves and Hossa and still can't score. I like to think the guy's pretty much the voice of Eeyore.
Yeah, that is... I didn't think that too.
Saad.
On a side note here, man, has anybody seen how awesome Jonathan Taves is this year?
Sorry, who?
Jonathan Taves?
Never heard of him.
No.
Man.
He's averaging a point a game, 4 goals, 3 assists. That's
all
right.
He plays on the team with that Oduya fella, right?
He's scoring.
He's playing all right, but he's no Patrick Marleau.
Yeah, but man, Taves. Dude's been. He's scored some pretty goals so far this year.
Yeah, he has. You got to have a lot of respect for the baby-faced assassin.
His shootout goal last night was a thing of beauty. He did that with such ease. It made it look so easy. Oh, fantastic.
Do you want to be, like, left alone with the video for a minute? You need a second?
Well, no, it's because Adam has stopped mentioning Hal Gill. So I have to...
I just haven't gotten to it yet.
So we need some unabashed fan mail.
Yes, we do. There's not enough love for a single player in the league on this show anymore.
Dude, I am all about Hal Gill. He is strong D personified.
As soon as Dustin Brown does something noteworthy, I'll let you know when he's back.
It'd be nice to see Corey Crawford actually do it this year. You know, a nice kid from Shattuck. But at the end of the day, I still don't think he's going to pull it off for a season.
I'd still rather see Razor Ray Emery do it again.
I'd love to see Razor Ray come back.
Your entertainment factor, man. You remember the section? Did you guys see the section that James Duffy did on Razor Ray Emery's closet?
No.
Yes.
Yeah, check that out sometime. He gets a guided tour of Ray Emery's closet.
That's a pretty good one. I will say that.
But a converted garage?
The man has suits. We'll put it that way.
Also, considering everything that guy has been through, it'd be nice to see him win one and then just go, all right, I'm done.
Well, that's it. And a guy who won comeback, who was in the running for comeback player of the year without having appeared in more than 20 games. That's the kind of depth that he got to before being able to pull himself back out. That's impressive.
That perseverance trophy that the NHL gives out.
What's that?
Bill Masterson?
Yeah, the Masterson.
Yeah, did he win it?
I don't think he did. Did he?
I know he was nominated.
Yeah, I knew he was a finalist.
Hey, Stat Monkey,
looking it up.
Yeah, he's googling. He's googling himself right here.
That'd be nice to see because honestly, if everything goes, you know, yeah, we're 6 games into the season, but at the same time, it's half a season that it normally is. So we're over 10% of the way through at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
You know. If it's a 48-game season and teams are averaging, like, 4 games, teams are about, what, 3-4 games a week at this point?
Yeah, I think it's 3 or 4 every week at this point. It has to
be.
Patches won last year. Duh.
Yeah, but I think, was he nominated last year?
I believe so, yes.
2 years ago.
Year before? Oh, well, hold on.
I know Patch already won it last year, but I think Emery was nominated for it 2 years ago.
Well, I know LaPerriere got that puck in the face, and then he ended up winning it the year before, I believe, right?
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah, Ian LaPerriere in 2011-12, diagnosed post-concussion about being hit in the face with a puck, blocking a shot, yada, yada, yada. Did not play during the 11 season, but continued to serve the team in several capacities.
Well, there you go.
Magical.
He was a finalist for the 2010-2011 Bill Masterson.
Yeah. There you go. I knew he was a finalist. I didn't think he'd won it.
Who won it that year?
Last year, that year was Ian LaPerriere, and then last year was Max Pacioretty.
The 2010-2011?
Yeah.
Was LaPerriere?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay.
I think I just said that, but okay.
I thought you said it was the year after that LaPerriere.
No, last year was Max Patches.
Okay. All right. Man, I really think Emery should have won that one. All right. I have to step away for a couple seconds here. You guys can talk amongst yourselves. How's that?
All right, sir. Let us know when you're back.
Oh, you'll hear me, don't
we? We're going to talk trash about you while you're gone.
All right. Good stuff.
All right. So, coming up this weekend, as we mentioned at the top of the show with James joining on to us, H.C. Wellington J. Knickerbocker takes to the ice for the, I'm going to say 40th because I'm just going to make up a number because I have no idea how long this thing's been around, for the annual Montreal Pond Hockey Festival, one of the largest outdoor tournaments in the country. Are you excited to play in that?
Absolutely. I don't think we actually talked about it on the show. I think we were asking James before the show while we were talking to him. So, yeah, a few of us will be playing. H.C. Wellington J. Knickerbocker.
Well, actually, all three of us here on the show. James. Orson Welles. And.
And we should also mention that since there are no goaltenders in this, I will be making an ass of myself more so than usual as a forward.
For the first game, then you'll just be making hot chocolate.
Yeah, probably. that's my fallback plan anyhow.
You guys are
Really looking forward to this event. It raises a lot of money for charity, draws in a lot of teams, not only from the Montreal area, but from Ottawa, Toronto, as far away as Vancouver.
Northeastern United States as well.
Yeah, a lot of teams coming in, a lot of fun, a lot of prizes. Really recommend everybody, if you're in the Montreal area, come out to Lachine this weekend. The tournament runs all day Saturday. Most of the day Sunday, guaranteed to be finished up in time for the Super Bowl festivities, of
Better
course.
Be.
Otherwise,
we're leaving early.
Yeah, like we're going to be anywhere near that championship game.
Yeah.
We have a tendency to not make it to Sundays
That's
when weekend
true.
Tournaments become an option for us.
I bet you Jim is, what? James?
Speak for yourselves. Some of us over here are winners.
Yeah, ball hockey doesn't count, champ.
Yeah, ball hockey is kind of like being a Nerf football champion. I mean, good for you, but...
Imagine Jim's surprise when I called his bluff and said, sure, I'll play.
That's true.
Yeah, he's regretting it now.
We all are.
Yeah, well, shut up. You just joined in today, so maybe I'm just going to knock you through the ice.
Hey, I could easily just not show up if you guys want.
No, don't do that. I don't do well with double shifting.
Yeah, and I'm going to be dead enough as it is. Practice for 2 hours and on the backyard rink earlier this week, and I was almost yakking over into the neighbor's yard.
Good stuff.
Doing his best Craig Benton impression, Neil Yakupov.
Speaking of Mr. Yakupov.
Speaking of segues.
Yeah, you know, why not?
Gotta get me one of those.
I'm pulling a topic out of the air right here. Controversy or no controversy?
Come on, no controversy. It's been totally taken out of context. They had just had a goal taken away from them, okay, with, what, less than 2 minutes to go, with less than a minute to go, with less than like 10 seconds to go. Yakupov belts it in to tie the game to put them into overtime. He's a kid. He's a rookie. Of course he's super stoked. Yeah, it maybe was a little bit excessive, but who cares? It's hockey. It's a game. It's fun. You're supposed to be having an amazing time, especially in circumstances like that. I wish people would get off his back and just be cool about it. It's not like he's going to do it every goal. It's not like they're up 5-1 and he, you know, jumped in the glass and went right through it. He did a big celebration on a cool goal.
So if I might summarize your point, sometimes younger players in the league have more emotion and shouldn't be held accountable for that display every once in a while?
I'm sorry. Anybody
and if so, how does that apply to Sidney Crosby?
He said Yakupov.
It's a trap.
Exactly. You're okay with Yakupov over-celebrating because it's the exuberance of youth. You're okay with that over-emotional display.
In an epic moment in a
game. Every moment
is
an epic moment in a game when you're an 18-year-old in the NHL.
Yeah, but screaming at the ref because you got a penalty is different from celebrating a goal that tied the game to put you into overtime moments after you'd had a goal taken away.
No. Yes. It's not at all. Because
it's a completely different situation. Apples and oranges.
Here's why this Yakupov situation is a bigger deal than people who defend it say, but not nearly as big a deal as people who are insulted think. Adam's absolutely right. This is a young kid who
we have that on tape,
who had an emotional response
recording
to a very high intensity situation. He's young. It's his third game in the league. They just had a goal taken away that would have tied the game with less than a minute left. He does tie the game with seconds left on the clock, like 4.7, 4.3, something like that.
4.7.
And then he loses his mind like he's Theo Fleury in overtime of Game 7, despite the fact that it's the third game of the regular season. Is it an overreaction on Yakupov's part? Oh, yeah, buddy, it is. You better believe that Ryan Smith and Sean Horkoff sat him down in a quiet room and gave him a talking to about the reasons that the LA Kings are going to try to rip off every one of their heads the next time they play that team. Because you rubbed salt in the wound of the Stanley Cup champion. You slapped the guy while he was down. That's what happened. Whether you meant to or not, that is what occurred on the ice. Does he need to be suspended? Does he need to be targeted? Does he need to be labeled as an arrogant problem player? No, he just overreacted. He needed to be talked to by a veteran. But he deserved the talk he's going to get.
Sure, he deserved the talk, but not the media beatdown. Not all these people whose asses are so tight when they fart only dogs can hear it, okay? The kid scored a big goal. Sure, it was the third game of the season. Who cares? That was the first home game, right, James?
No.
Was that his first?
They lost the home opener badly to San Jose.
Oh, but he scored in that game anyway, though, right? Wouldn't he?
Yeah, he scored in that game.
Okay. Anyway, it was a big moment for a rookie player. Sure, let them give him a talking to because you're right. It'll piss off the Kings. But too bad. He shouldn't have let the goal in then.
No. Yes. That's not how it works. That's like saying it's okay for Terrell Owens to pull down his pants and pretend to crap on the Dallas Star because if they wanted him to not do that, they should have stopped him from getting in the end zone. The fact of the matter is within a sport, there is a certain standard. Hockey's is different from other sports. Basketball's is different from other sports, and football's is different from other sports. Every sport has a unique line, and you're not allowed to cross it. Look, in basketball, you can do a choreographed dance, and that's okay. In football, you can do a dance. In basketball, you can wave your finger in a guy's face. That's okay. In baseball, if you look at the pitcher wrong after hitting a home run, both benches will clear. That's the unspoken rule. You're not allowed to make that gesture. It's an insult. In hockey, you're not allowed to flip out like Neil Yakupov did unless you've scored in overtime of a huge game for your franchise. You can't do it because you tied the third game of the regular season.
Hey, man, in a short season, every game is a huge game.
It is, and that's why I'll give him a pass to say, listen, the kid didn't know. He over-celebrated. He needs a talking to.
But it's also...
So let's recognize it as what it is, a mistake made by a rookie that needs to be corrected. It's not the end of the world, but it absolutely is the wrong thing to do.
I think in the context of how it happened with them having the goal taken away moments before and then tying it again properly, it's cool. Yeah, sure, you're not going to get that from a pro. But this is a guy who probably idolizes Alex Ovechkin, who after he scores any goal in a game will go jump halfway up the glass in the corner of the boards.
And takes also a lot of heat for it, deservedly so, because
right.
It defies the standard. It doesn't matter who you look up to. What matters is how you react. And it doesn't matter if the kid's 18, you say that's fine from a pro. Last time I checked, he's cashing his paychecks. He is a pro.
Yes, but again, it's a game. You're supposed to be having fun. And he was obviously having a hell of a lot of fun enjoying that.
There's a huge difference between having fun and showing disrespect.
It wasn't disrespectful towards them.
It is in hockey because that is the standard and it always has been.
Set by guys from...
Everyone who plays the game knows it. If you want to have a debate about whether or not the standard is right, that's different. The debate right now is does Nail Yakupov deserve the crap he's taking for breaking that standard? Yes, he knew the standard and he broke it. If you want to have a discussion about the culture of hockey and whether or not we should be allowed to celebrate more, that's a different discussion. What Yakupov did stepped over the line, and he knew it. And therefore, he needs to be rectified.
Well, if he knew it, then they wouldn't have had to give him a talking to.
Apparently not. Look, I've done stuff that I know is wrong on the ice. Every rookie, every person who's ever played a sport has. And they need to be sat down and pointed it out. That's why there are coaches. That's why there are veterans on the team. Ryan Smith isn't there because he's the best way they could spend that money for goal production. He's there so we can teach these kids how to act like pros.
James?
My thoughts are the exact same ones of Eric Bélanger.
Oh, okay.
They asked him after the whole thing, and he said he can do whatever the hell he wants. I'm not chasing after him.
Well, yeah, so there you go. Good for you, kid, but you go make an idiot of yourself. I'll stand over here and act like a pro.
Yeah, it was, you want to go celebrate on your own? Fine, whatever. I'm not chasing after you.
Last night when he scored that winner, he was ecstatic. Energy was coursing through the entire Oilers team. He lost his damn mind. But he didn't insult anybody.
Well, yes, Derek Morris.
Well, Derek Morris was going to be insulted anyway. He knew that. You knew that that was set up.
But see, that's the thing. Derek Morris took that the complete wrong way. If you actually watch what happened last night, I was watching. After he scored, from the way that it looked, every single guy on the ice for the Oilers wasn't quite sure what he was going to do.
Well, that's why he called them in towards him.
Exactly. And I think that's...
Yep.
I think Derek Morris misunderstood the come-get-some wave that Yakupov was giving.
It was definitely interpreted as, instead of a come-celebrate-with-me, he thought it was a that's-right-come-and-get-it kind of thing.
I think that's how Morris took it. I took it as a, no, guys, I'm staying here this time. Please come give me a hug.
Well, exactly. If anything, it was kind of funny. It was kind of endearing.
It was really funny because he stood there for what seemed like forever.
Yeah.
And nobody was chasing him. He was all alone behind the net.
You don't want to look like the jackass who goes to hug him while he fires off down the other end again.
Dragging a guy with him through center ice this time.
It was really funny. The goal reminded me a lot of the Theo Fleury sliding across the ice, because it was same building, almost the same thing. But it reminded me more of the Brad May overtime goal against Boston in the
playoffs
years ago. Yeah, Mayday! It actually reminded me more of that.
But again, the difference in my opinion is that both of those goals were overtime winners in the playoffs.
Yes.
This was a tying goal in the third game of the regular season.
Yeah.
There's a huge difference in context there. And a lot of people, what they don't remember, and this is... Craig Simpson actually said this on CBC Radio the next day, was that what people don't remember about that Theo Fleury goal, or what people would not necessarily even know, let alone remember, is that the following game, the Oilers were losing to the Flames at the first intermission. Mark Messier gave a rousing intermission speech based on the fact that Theo Fleury came in here and insulted us and slapped us around and spit in our faces, and we're not going to put up with that. And Mark Messier's entire speech was about the fact that Theo Fleury had walked in there and insulted them, riled the team up, and apparently, if you ask a lot of the guys in that locker room, was the turning point for why Edmonton won that series.
Yeah, hey. It's a good bulletin board material.
Yes, it is.
The next time, it would have been even worse had he done it in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, we gotten shot on the 405.
That would have been
in this situation, I partially agree with both of you. You know,
way to take the middle road.
Well, no, it's hard to really pick in between both of your sides because you're both kind of right in this sense. As a big Oiler fan and as someone who was right there watching every second of that game, I know not everybody follows them on Twitter like I do, but a lot of the Edmonton radio personalities, like Dan Tenser I think he's from the team out in Edmonton, and a bunch of other guys that were over there, every single person made the same comment before and after the goal, is that the atmosphere in the building at the time was that of the 2006 Stanley Cup playoff run. The loudness of the building was right up there. And even just watching it here at home, you could feel what it was like to be there in that crowd. Like, everyone was just into that game. It was into that moment. And after the disallowed goal, which I still think...
Yeah, that should have been a goal.
A terrible call. I don't care what anybody wants to say about...
Yeah, there was no interference on that. Gagné was...
You know... Carey Fraser had the worst argument for allowing that goal ever on TSN.ca. I'm sorry, Carey. You're stupid. You're wrong. I agree with you most of the time, but you're dumb on that call. Gagné's trying to get out of Quick's pad, but he can't. You can't hold that against him because he was pushed there by Scuderi in the first place. The whole situation led to that moment. It was a boiling point of emotion. Yeah, it's only the third game of the season, but it didn't feel like the third game of the season. And that's why I agree with Adam on this case in the term of it was okay to do, because it felt like a playoff game. It felt like it needed like that huge release at the end of it. It was insane in the fact that dude batted the puck out of the air. It was like 3 feet in the air. Like, that goal had no business of going in. It was an amazing thing to pull off in the first place in the situation with 4.7 seconds left in the game. I've only seen one other goal scored in that building that rivals it in terms of, holy crap, I can't believe that just happened. Was it a little over the top? No, I honestly don't think so. That's what he felt like doing. That's what he felt like doing. But at the same time, from a Kings perspective, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, if I'm Drew Doughty, the next time I see that guy, I'm not giving him the benefit of the doubt.
I'm not going to score a goal either. Useless. Jesus.
I mean, that's... I'm not ready to write Yakupov off as a hot dogger or to say that that's a character flaw.
That would be a horrible misjudgment if you did.
But you can.
At this point.
Well, and that's exactly it. But you can look at it and say, kid, you've got a body of work that's a week and a half long in this league. And right now, the one moment people remember most about you is you scored an incredible, as James said, batted it out of the air in an electric environment to tie the game against the Stanley Cup champions in your own barn. And nobody 5 years from now is going to remember the goal. They're going to remember the way you celebrated and the controversy it stirred. That's sad. He took that away from himself.
But I'm pretty sure he's going to score plenty of other wicked goals.
Sure he is.
So it's just going to be a moot point anyway.
Sure, but the fact that a point will later become irrelevant does not make it irrelevant now. The fact of the matter is, what does this say about this kid based on what we've seen?
What it says about him 5 years down the road is also irrelevant then.
Okay, then why are we doing this show? Because what we say about the teams as we predict based on what they've done so far is going to mean nothing once the Stanley Cup is awarded. Because what we do is we look at the information we have and we use it to make the best judgment possible. Right now, this kid's got a very small body of work, and he's got one glaring blemish on it. I'm just saying, it's not ideal. Someone's going to talk to him. I'm not ready to write him off or to say he's useless. Clearly, he's talented. Clearly, he's exciting. He's enthralling to watch. I would love to have him on my team. But he needs to be talked to because he made a mistake.
And we'll assume that it will be done. He will be spoken to, have learned his lesson. I think he's been duly chastised based upon his reaction last time he scored. And therefore, it's all win-win for everybody. He has learned his lesson. Well, let's move on to something else. Speaking of memorable stupid things.
Hold on.
Remember when Rafi Torres tried
to... Hold on, you're cutting James off here.
Oh, am I really? Sorry, James.
See, I don't agree with the he needs to be chastised. I don't agree with that whatsoever.
Not chastised, but... just pointed in the right direction by a veteran.
Yeah, well, like, you know, I'm sure somebody sat him down and explained to him, because I'm sure he thought to himself, I don't understand what's going on, and personally, I don't even really... The whole controversy thing was unjustly blown out of proportion, that is without a doubt, but at the same time, it should have just been, hey, he scored the goal, he went for a crazy slide, and the Kings are pissed. Leave it at that. Next time it comes around, you got a pretty damn good storyline for the next time those two teams play. Now it's just been talked to freaking death at this point. So, but you just leave it at that. And had everybody left it at that, it's fine, whatever. I personally don't like the way that it was blown up. It was way more than it needed to be. I'm doing a current little experiment right now, which is going to end up going up on the website in pieces over the next couple weeks. I am only watching hockey games from the out-of-market feed. It's an interesting experiment. But last night, watching the Oilers game from the Phoenix perspective, like, their during the game poll was, did Yakupov go too far? Like, that goal was a couple games back.
Answered by 11 people in Phoenix.
It's like, not even a... It shouldn't even be a point for anybody watching on Fox Sports Phoenix at that. Like, there's no reason for that, and that's the part that I have the problem with it. Like, yeah, fine. He over-celebrated to some people, but that's fine for those people. Other people think it was great. Whoop-de-freaking-do. Get over yourselves. Yes, there's a code of conduct in the NHL. He may have broken that. Dude was probably told after he scored by... Like, I'm sure they joked about it in the room. Hey, Yak... you're really going to get an ass kicking the next time we play the Kings, so watch yourself. And he's probably going to sit there going, why? I don't understand. Just, are they like sore losers? Like, well, no, you kind of rubbed it in their face, yada, yada, yada. Next time he goes out, if he was a, you know, if he was, say, Brad May, he'd drop the gloves with somebody. But in this tense, he's probably just going to get laid out by Rob Scuderi. Something like that. And done. Situation's over, there's no controversy, but the fact that people were still talking about it as of last night, that was stupid.
I mean, we're still talking of it as of tonight.
Yeah, but we don't have a weekly show. We don't have a nightly show.
Yeah, that's true.
We only do these once a week, so we don't have the luxury of talking about it all the time. So yeah, that's my take on the whole thing. It was really... If you're not a part of it, you're not going to understand it. And as an Oilers fan watching that game, I totally understood it. But I could see how it could be misconstrued and taken as rubbing it in from anybody else's perspective.
Cool.
Okay. All right,
then. Question to the both of you. As you may or may not recall, last year, Rafi Torres, gentleman and wonderful player that he is, tried to kill Marian Hossa, right? It was Hossa during the playoffs? Yeah.
Yep.
So he is a probable for this Saturday to start, and because his suspension is now over. It was reduced from 25 to 21 games, I think, by Uncle Gary. And they'll be playing the Coyotes. The Blackhawks will be playing the Coyotes on the 7th of February. Do you think anything will happen?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So who is going to do what from the Blackhawks? Because, I mean, I'm looking at it. Do they have somebody? I mean,
it's got to be Pickle, right? Am I wrong? Pickle or Mayers, I would assume, is going to have to take a run at him. Nick Leddy can throw. I know that. There's absolutely no way Rafi Torres gets through the first 35 seconds of his shift without answering for that.
Like Dave Boland could take a run at him.
Yep. Yeah, there's a couple guys there who could throw.
Duncan Keith. We're not even talking maybe just necessarily throwing it down and actually just fighting it out here. Like,
Yeah, you're talking guys who may want to seriously hurt him.
Well, and rightfully so. But, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Is it – how far do you go to avenge something like that? Because, again, you know, you're a professional. You absolutely – you know, you stick up for your team come hell or high water. But is it worth getting yourself in turn suspended for 10, 15, 20 games?
Okay, well, here, I'll give you one right now.
And I – just for the record, I absolutely think that someone should knock this idiot's head off. Just so you know, but I'm just wondering
your... What's he playing?
Pardon me?
When was the date?
It'll be the 7th of February that they're playing them.
When you're placed on injured reserve, how long are you there for, you think?
I don't know how it works in normal...
It depends on the circumstance of the injury.
Yeah.
Damn. But are you talking about Torres, though?
No, because... Lest we forget, Dan Carcillo is still currently a member of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Oh, yeah.
But as of 30th, was placed on injured reserve because of a knee injury.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, look, that's your best option realistically, right? If you could send the car bomb in there, there's absolutely nobody in the league that's going to... He's going to rip Torres apart.
For one more second, you guys talk amongst yourselves as to who's going to kick Ravi Torres' ass.
Yeah, you know what? To be honest with you, I would even look down at the is it the Wolves?
Carcillo is listed as being out indefinitely.
So, I mean, I would honestly, and I'm not a proponent of setting up fights. I'm really not. I think that a staged fight is probably my least favorite aspect of hockey's physicality. I'm all for fights that actually occur and make sense. But I would, yeah, it is Chicago Wolves. So, I mean, I would look at really anybody in that lineup. I'd just start looking at penalty minutes. I would do it Don Cherry style. And I hate to say that, but I would call in a goon. I mean, this is a guy who took a headshot at a superstar. You know what I mean? This is a dangerous...
And a blatant and dangerous headshot at that. Not
a very, very dangerous situation, because what we're talking about right now on this show, the words that we're projecting out there, we are setting up a Todd Bertuzzi, Steve Moore situation. We're talking about, essentially, let's call it what we call it. Rafi Torres has been around for a long time, and he's had some offensive success, but he's a goon, he's a bum, who took a run at a superstar. And that's exactly what happened in Vancouver. Steve Moore took that run at Sedin, at Naslund, excuse me, and just leveled him for no reason and laid him out. And Bertuzzi went after him because Moore would not fight him. The reason Todd Bertuzzi jumped on his back was because Moore refused to turn around and face him like a man and stand up and fight for what he had done. He was a fourth-line bum who took a run at a superstar, took a vicious headshot that sidelined a guy for half a season, and then refused to stand up and own his actions. I know that Todd Bertuzzi should never have done what he did, but it's not like he grabbed the guy's neck and twisted. He punched a guy in the head who deserved a punch in the head, mm-hmm. who refused to turn around and own his actions. Yeah. I've always been sympathetic towards Bertuzzi in that case, despite the fact that I do believe he earned a suspension, he deserved to sit out. Yes, all of that needed to happen because you can't fight an unwilling participant. But the fact that Moore was an unwilling participant at that point was downright gutless. So now I look at this situation where we see Torres coming back into the lineup. Hossa was knocked clean out of the playoffs last year, gone for the season, took forever to come back. Now I see a situation where Torres needs to fight. And the most dangerous thing I think that could happen is Torres refuses that fight. Because if he does, somebody on the Chicago Blackhawks roster is going to bring the fight to him, and it's not going to be pretty. Mm-mm. I mean, this is old school ethos in hockey. This is the code at its finest. And I know that there are a lot of, and I don't mean to sound like Don Cherry here, but there are a lot of those quote-unquote teetoters out there who don't like this aspect of the game. This is a fact. If you want to have bodies that size, moving around at that speed, smashing into each other, with only a few sets of eyes governing the rule, governing the action, governing the play, you have to give the players the ability to police themselves. And that's what you will see when Rafi Torres takes the ice against the Chicago Blackhawks. You will see the players police themselves. You will see the enforcement of the code. you will see somebody answer for what they've done.
It's definitely a game I want to tune into. I just really hope that the way it goes down is in as, I guess, honorable or civilized a fashion
of
it can
course.
Be. Because if it is something blatantly bad, that's just going to be it'll make the NHL look bad.
Yep.
It'll make the team look bad. It'll make the players look bad. And that's not something the NHL can afford to do to its image, especially now coming into where they are in
yeah.
a place like Phoenix. It's they got to make sure it's done right, because I'd be out for blood for sure.
And then that's the thing. That's why I point out specifically the Moore Bertuzzi incident, is because that one was not handled right. Bertuzzi tried so many times, and so a lot of those Canucks players did,
mm-hmm.
to try to get Moore to turn around and face up and square off and fight like he should have done.
Yeah.
And Moore refused. And then Todd Bertuzzi did something stupid. So one man was a coward, and then one man was an idiot, and somebody got their neck broke. And I'll tell you right now, if Torres turns out to be a coward in this situation, I don't know that there's enough resolution on that Chicago Blackhawks roster that somebody won't be the idiot.
What's it going to be, Ray Emery?
You know what? Like, the way that hit was thrown, the distance that Hossa was from the puck in the neutral zone, the time that had passed since he released that pass, and the fact that he was literally standing there looking the other direction. Torres left his feet to make contact directly with the face, not the head. I mean, he jumped and threw a headshot into this guy. Somebody's going to be out for blood. And as much as I'm, again, not a proponent of the organized fights, this is one of the times where the game needs to police itself. This is what keeps people honest. This is why incidents like the Torres hit don't happen on a daily basis, is because when they do, there are consequences to pay. No amount of paychecks missed, no amount of sitting at home on your couch watching your big screen TV is going to make a guy feel sorry the way Duncan Keith is going to make this guy feel sorry on February 7th. Or Dave Bolin, or Brian Bickle, or Jamal Mayers, or if a miracle comes off, I wouldn't be surprised to see Carcillo come out of the stands knowing his temperament. It makes me nervous. And I honest to God hope that it's off the opening faceoff, two men square up, knowing the rules, throw down, the fans are satisfied, the teams are satisfied, they spend 5 minutes in the box, and everybody goes home happy and in one piece.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario is much, much worse than that.
I want to see him get his ass kicked. I don't want to see him hurt badly, you know, because that's the thing. Like,
yeah.
Well, you do kind of want to see him hurt badly because he got a history of it, and this was the most blatant of blatant.
Well, not badly. You don't want to see
not
a guy.
Badly. You don't want his career over.
Well, that's it. You know, or
but you want him
to be honest with you, I want Torres' career to be over, but not by injury. I just want him out of the league. He's a bum. He's a headhunter. You know what I mean? He's Matt Cook without the remorseful turnaround.
Well, if you read some of the stuff, he's going to try to adapt his game. You know, he just wants to rub guys out. He doesn't want to hurt people
but
that.
This has been seven or eight major incidents.
Of course, exactly. He's a recidivist
idiot. Yeah, it's just not going to work that way. That's kills me.
Mm-hmm.
It breaks my heart, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm not certain that there's going to be a positive outcome from this situation, and I'm not certain that there can be. This is eye for an eye territory. And, you know, they say an eye for an eye leaves us both blind, but realistically, I've already been blinded in this situation. So if I'm already blind, you might as well be blind, right? Like, sure, eye for an eye leaves us both blind, but I didn't walk up to two perfectly well-sighted people and say, hey, you guys should blind each other. One of them got blinded, and now the other one's out for revenge. I don't think the guy seeking revenge cares that they're both going to end up blind. That's kind of the point.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And that's how I see the story of the situation breaking down.
Cool. All right. James, you back yet?
No, he would have been chiming in all over that. He would not have liked anything I had to say there. You can assume he is still out of the running. So what do we got moving on next? We're going to take a look at, readjusting some of our predictions is what we've got on the docket. We're just going to go ahead and jump in without James then. I know for a fact that I had Pittsburgh winning the Atlantic, but New York coming out of the East in the playoffs. I basically copped out and I said that the two most talented teams in the Eastern Conference were basically going to finish neck and neck at the top of the Eastern Conference. So gutsy call by me. Adam, I believe you had one of Pittsburgh or New York.
I think it was New
out.
York because I was expecting Nash to come up huge this year.
Where do you stand on that as of right now?
Well, I still think that New York has just got a hell of a lot of talent. They've got solid goaltending. I don't see any reason why New York doesn't come out on top of the East.
Specifically Atlanta, I guess.
Yeah, okay, yeah, sorry, divisions and not conference. Yeah, so I still see New York coming out on top of the Atlantic. I think I said Montreal because I'm a total homer, and I still want to believe that, so I will still stand to that. What? Oh, my bad. Sorry. I'm jumping all over the place. Atlantic, New York, Adam, go.
Yeah, you know what? After seeing the initial part of the season play out, I think the Rangers and Penguins are playing tonight, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes,
sir. Playing their next game versus each other. Two teams that are both 3-3 but headed in very different directions. After struggling out of the gate, the Rangers have started to look very good. Sorry, what's the score right now?
Pittsburgh is up 3-0.
Oh, well, there you go.
Pittsburgh.
What's that?
Pittsburgh. 3-0 Pittsburgh.
All right, thank you. I guess James is back with us.
8:43 left in the third period.
Oh, I guess only Adam gets the clown music for the live look-ins.
Yep.
That's too bad.
Over the Boston Bruins.
I do see Pittsburgh coming in strong again in the regular season. I think the Rangers are too talented to blow it in the playoffs. I will stick with my prediction of Pittsburgh to win the Atlantic. But one thing I do want to point out today, the signing or the claiming on waivers of Zach Boychuk, the 14th overall pick in 2008 by the Carolina Hurricanes. First-round draft pick, claimed on waivers by the Pittsburgh Penguins today. Here's a guy who's played round about 70 games in his career over the course of 4 or 5 seasons. Never really had the ability to stick with the big club. And in an interview today, Dan Bylsma says, "Oh, yeah, that guy? I think I'm going to stick him on a line with Malkin and Neal." That's quite the step up from not being good enough to play for the Carolina Hurricanes, is it not?
I would say a definite yes.
James?
Here's your shot, kid.
Yeah, hey, why not? If you're going to play on a line with two dudes, why not?
I'll take those two dudes.
Yeah, why not? Unless you're going to play on a line with Thornton and Marlowe right now.
The Pavelski effect.
I'll take Jersey for the Atlantic because I feel like Brodeur in a shortened season will be the best. They're going to win a lot of one-goal games in the sense that...
They will win by a goal, yes.
Well, no, because there's going to be a lot of games that are going to be closer than they actually should be because of the condensed scheduling and because of the, oh, well, this team had to play back-to-back or, you know, you're on your third game in 4 nights sort of thing. And
yeah, when you start pulling in all those outside factors, goaltending really does become that deciding point a lot of the time.
And I think Jersey will play enough of a safe system that will win them enough of those games, specifically against those opponents, because teams like Pittsburgh and the Rangers will probably just end up beating the hell out of each other in one game and then beating the hell out of them and Philadelphia in the next game and then end up playing against Jersey, and Jersey's like, all right, well, we're just going to sit back and wait for you to get tired and go score 2 goals and let Brodeur do the rest.
That exciting brand of hockey which New Jersey often plays, yes.
Yeah, hey, you know what? If that's how they want to play it, that's how they want to play it. Jersey, after 5 games, the only team in the NHL that has not let in double digits worth of goals against.
Yeah, and I mean, that's all thanks to that stud of an old man they've got, Martin Brodeur. You know, K-Ross doesn't think, well, you know, I've said a few times, I think he's the best goaltender there's ever, you know, ever, or at least modern day. And, you know, K-Ross writes it off saying it's because of the style of hockey they play and everything like that. He's not here to defend that because normally he'd have jumped in right now and hit me over the head with a Patrick
Waugh. Oh,
but, you know, it's Martin Brodeur is just a solid all-around goaltender. Yeah, he hasn't. He's never single-handedly won the Cup once or twice as Patrick Waugh has. And, you know, credit to Waugh. But Brodeur is just a fantastic goaltender. And, you know, if you can, if you have a goalie that can let you get away with scoring two goals a game average and still win, then you're in a good way. So keep it up, man.
Hold on. I have to mute my microphone for just a second here, okay?
Okay, I'm all alone, man. So cool.
All right, just hold on a second.
Awesome. No, that's okay, man. Mute your microphone. James, welcome back, hey, Ross. James has muted his microphone, and I just said that Martin Brodeur is a million times better than Patrick ever was on his best day.
All right, there you go. I'm back.
I didn't really say that, but I figured you'd want to jump in anyhow.
I don't know.
Okay. Sorry, what are we debating here? The merits of...
No, James was saying Jersey...
going to win the Atlantic.
Yeah, It's just really difficult to pick a team with no scoring in a division that's got
all sorts.
Gavrik, Nash, Richards, Crosby, Malkin, and Zach Boychuk.
Hold on, Wells, are you there?
Yes, I am, James.
Was he there for my explanation as to why I'm picking Jersey?
No, he was indisposed.
Okay, here's my reasoning for why I'm picking Jersey.
Really? Can't you just get it later?
No, I'm just going to tell him right now.
All right, make it fast.
I'm picking Jersey because teams like New York and Pittsburgh and, well, obviously Philly as well, and anybody else in that division, I feel, yeah, they're technically better scoring teams, but in a shortened, condensed schedule like this, you're going to be playing a lot of back-to-back nights and a lot of three games in four nights sort of thing, and that will lend itself better to the Devils because they're going to play a safer style that when those teams are tired and end up playing against them, a all-star goalie like Martin Brodeur is still going to be able to keep those high-scoring teams to maybe one or two goals a game, which will allow the, yes, anemic New Jersey offense to still score enough to win.
So the plan is to just basically be the New Jersey Devils from the last 20 years.
Yes.
That's why I would also just like to point out, I know this is in context of playing against the New York Islanders, but that game is tied at four right now. New Jersey has scored four goals.
They also gave up four to the Islanders.
Yes, that's true. Brodeur did not have his Geritol, and as such is suffering for it, but still. Anyhow, on to...
Score, that's not a debate, and anybody can score against the Islanders. That's not really a debate either, so...
Right, okay, so on to the Northeast.
That's a good point to bring up.
I'm just simply saying that they have shown some offense tonight. Okay. Anyhow, Northeast.
Northeast.
What do you got?
I'm still picking Boston.
Yeah, I am still not. That goaltending situation still will fall apart. I really like what Boston's doing up front. I think their blue line, it's hard to say, lacks depth with Zdeno Chara in the lineup. He counts as two. But I don't necessarily see them being built for success. I'm just going to say that if I picked Montreal as an open shot because I thought Boston was going to fall off, I thought they maybe had a 15% crack at it, I'm going to go ahead and up those odds to 25 to 30. I really like what I'm seeing out of the team chemistry from Michel Therrien. I have to admit that I really have to eat my words when it comes to Therrien based on what I've seen so far this year. His MO while with the Pittsburgh Penguins was to lean heavily on the superstars and to not quite find that depth and that full team chemistry. That was his biggest knock. Since arriving in Montreal, maybe he's changed. Maybe it's because there is not a Sidney Crosby or an Evgeny Malkin here. But he really seems to be rolling all four lines through, finding production from all of them. He's got a lot of guys back-checking hard. I have to say, the Montreal Canadiens really look to be a well-coached team right now. And it kind of pains me to say that because I'm no Michel Therrien supporter. I was very upset when he was hired. And I still think he was hired for the wrong reasons. But from what I've seen in a very short sample size, he has made the most of this opportunity. And I really like Carey Price between the pipes. in much the same way that James says that he'll take New Jersey because of Martin Brodeur, this is going to be a division that's won by a lot of close games. I'll take the best goaltender in the division. I know Craig Anderson's hot right now, but over the course of the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen Carey Price has the ability to be that X factor.
And Ottawa's number one producer in points, Jason Spezza, is out for a long time.
Oh, absolutely. And Gonchar's not going to last forever. No. He is notorious for issues. Not that they're the favorites to win it, but if I was going to take them with a 15% chance, I'll lock that in with a 30% chance. I mean, they look good, and I do believe that Boston will fall off.
Yeah, I'm also still on the Habs bandwagon. I mean, I'm a total homer in choosing them, but I like what they're doing this year. They've got offense from more than one line. Markov is back playing like the Markov of old. You know, like you said, for the same reason of Jersey, for solid goaltending, and add some positive offense to that as well, and strong defense. So, I mean, I would put it at even higher, maybe a 40 to 50% chance.
All right, James, rip us to shreds.
No, he already said Boston.
Yeah, we'll give him a chance to retort.
No, no rebuttals. Go for it, James.
I'm sticking with the Bruins.
Based upon?
I think they're the best team in the division.
Well, James, this is going to make for a terrible radio segment because that's the reason we've all picked all our teams.
I think from top to bottom, minus, obviously, yes, Carey Price is. Actually, you know what? I'm not even going to say Carey Price is the best goalie in the division.
Ryan Miller might be.
Yeah, it depends on which Ryan Miller plays this season.
And I like the team in front of the Habs, in front of Carey Price, a lot better than I like the team in front of Ryan Miller right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. But I think Boston is in the same situation that Chicago is in. Not so much. I don't think Boston is nearly as strong as Chicago. I think Chicago is one of the best all-around teams going right now. Boston, I think, just needs Tuukka Rask to be good enough. They don't need him to be great. They just need him to be good enough. And I think he'll do more than that at getting them the division.
See, I wonder if Boston is that deep. Because the last couple of years, Boston has been in the hunt for first place in the East. They've been up there with some of the better teams. But Tim Thomas has been spectacular to get them there. I don't think Tuukka Rask can play good enough and rely on that team to get him high into the playoff hunt. Because Tim Thomas couldn't.
I think it'll get them the division. I don't necessarily think it'll get them deep into the playoffs.
Well, no, I'm just high in the playoff picture. I'm talking top three seed, a division winner.
Yeah, I believe they will finish as, let's say, the number two seed.
Interesting. All right.
Because I have a new pick as my number one seed.
I see where you're coming from. No longer Carolina?
No longer the Carolina Hurricanes. You know what? Anders Lindback.
Oh, yeah. Now you're on my bandwagon. Dude, for the record, I took Tampa Bay to win that division 2 weeks ago.
You know what? I said Carolina was my out-of-nowhere pick for this year. But Tampa,
still nowhere.
Tampa was the, I want to say, better option of the two, but I really believed in the moves of bringing in the Stalls together, and I thought Cam Ward was going to be a little bit better than what he has been. But yeah, no. I have Tampa Bay, at this point right now, number one in the East going into the playoffs.
Whoa! That's a bit of a switch up.
That's where I'm going with that one. I'm going to take that one to the end. And even 24 games into this season, when we redo this, I'm sticking with it.
Sticking with it. I like that. Hey, listen, I stuck with the Kings last year, and it worked for me. You stick with it, buddy.
I'm sticking with them. Martin St. Louis. Hey, Le Cavalier seems back on his game right now.
Wait.
Always a good thing.
Can I point out something that I don't think anybody's giving nearly enough attention to in Tampa Bay so far this year?
Go for it.
Sammy Salo is a plus 10
yep.
at this point in the season.
Average plus 20. 10.
How do you do that in six games?
He is averaging almost 22 minutes a game, and he is plus 10.
Yeah, that's a significant.
And the team as a whole is plus 14. This is in the division last year that finished with nobody being in the plus column in goal differential.
There is one negative plus minus on the entire Lightning team.
That's not bad. It's probably Steve Yzerman.
It's defenseman Brian Lee.
Oh, Brian Lee. I know that guy. Give him some help.
He's a better doctor than he is defenseman, that's for sure.
I hope he's not a negative three kind of doctor. I'll tell you that. I'm not looking for a guy with a net loss in that category.
Have we done the West at all? I don't know.
No, we haven't touched the West yet.
No, sir. Let's get it started.
Save the West
pick
for last.
Division and tell us who you got.
Well, I know I picked Chicago for the Central if they managed a goalie. I said if they didn't get a goalie, it would be Nashville. St. Louis is looking really good, but I'm going to stick with my Chicago because I think they found their goalie in Corey Crawford.
All right. I like that pick. I mean, it's hard to argue with a team that's 6-0-1.
Yeah. I remember the Pacific. I picked L.A.
Hang on. I thought we were doing this division at a time.
Yeah, I got yelled at for that last time.
Well, I was just going to do my three real quick. And
all right.
But for sure. Well, who you guys got in the Central?
Adam?
I think I had originally said Nashville because I am a Pekka head.
You were on Chicago with me.
I was on Chicago?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Because I was going to change off of Nashville anyway. Probably just St. Louis, but I mean, I'll jump on your bandwagon, sure. Chicago.
You were originally Chicago with me.
No, I still...
semi-debated each other being on Chicago.
I like St. Louis, though, with Elliot and my old buddy Yarrow.
Yarrow the Pharaoh, the Loch Ness Monster.
Well, that's it, man. I think that goaltending can do a lot for you, and I'm going to call St. Louis.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to not waver from my prediction here either. I'm sticking with my prediction
Columbus.
Almost across the board. I'm going to go with Nashville on this one. And I was leaning towards getting away from Nashville. I would have actually gone to Chicago because I'm so impressed with what I've seen. But I don't trust Crawford as much as you two guys do. I know you're both still a little wary, but I'm still even a little more trigger shy with him. I saw a very interesting piece actually done by Jamie McLennan today in which he broke down Pecorine's goaltending style and showed that many of the reasons that he's letting in goals right now is because he's setting very, very deep in his crease, which serves you well when you play international hockey, which is where he played the first half of this season on the big international ice. That's the way you have to play your angles. In the National Hockey League, you need to be out much, much further. And I saw a lot of very interesting tape today that showed Pekka Rinne trying very hard to stay at the top of his crease, but drifting back in as the play went on. I think it's only a matter of time before something that fundamental just kind of comes with the flow and goes away. I don't think that Nashville's woes right now are caused by missing Suter. I feel like they're caused by some very untimely and very uncharacteristically soft goals by Pekka Rinne. And I don't think that's going to last. I really feel like
based on
what we've seen, he's going to get his game together.
Rinne is not the type of goalie to sit down and be mediocre for any extended period of time, for any amount of time even.
Yeah.
But I seem to recall, because I mean, I've always been told, you know, cut the angles out, come far out of your net, yada, 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 you know, big wide butterfly. But I mean, there's a lot of, I read in the offseason that some of the goalie coaches are coaching them, even on the NHL ice, to stay in the net, to not come out nearly as much, and even to have this tight butterfly style, you know, to not allow any of those gaps in your chest protector and stuff. And it just seems totally counterintuitive to everything you've learned. But goaltending seems to be evolving so constantly that everybody can come up with a tape saying that, you know, or sorry, CD, DVD, whatever.
No, but this was particularly a game-changing goal so far this season. Mm-hmm. And he was showing literally very, very similar circumstances from a year previous. Goals or shots coming in from a similar angle. Even pucks that he didn't see that were hitting him.
Mm-hmm.
Just because
you're
out
of the net, yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, sure, maybe if a young goaltender is coming up through the ranks, there's a new theory in goaltending that could apply to them better. But if you're Pekka Rinne, you're not making any fundamental changes right now.
No.
If your style is to come out and challenge it to do that, you just got to trust that works. You know what I mean? And I think he'll get back to what's made him successful. He will dance with the one what brung him, as they say.
All right, so Pacific. I had the Kings. I'm sticking with the Kings.
Adam?
I guess the Kings. I mean, they are the reigning champs. San Jose is San Jose, so who knows how long it'll last. It'd be cool to see San Jose go through the season and take the division, as long as they do fall out in the playoffs as per their, you know, track record. Phoenix, you know, looked great last year, and then one thing led to another, and they just, you know, whatever. But yeah, okay, so that's it.
Yeah, you know what? The Pacific, I took Dallas. They're sitting in last place. I'm still taking Dallas. I don't care that they've lost three in a row. They just got back their most talented offensive player in Jamie Benn. You're still looking at a lot of that chemistry to fall into line with the additions of Ray Whitney and Jaromir Jagr. That's going to take a little bit of time to settle, but this is a team that really made some noise around the playoff deadline last year, made a hell of a run of it, and in my opinion, with their roster changes, did get slightly better. I love adding Derek Waugh in from Buffalo, and I really trust that goaltending situation. I mean, when it comes down to it, Lettinen is a for-real NHL goaltender who does not get enough attention because of where he is. I know they're not sitting pretty right now. I still like Dallas to come back and win that division, but L.A. will absolutely outperform them in the long run. I think L.A. is a far better team. I just liked picking Dallas as a dark horse, and I think I'll stick with my guns on it.
Which brings us to the greatest division in all of hockey, the Northwest.
Unless you're looking to, like, make the playoffs or anything.
I honestly have no idea who either of you guys picked here.
I believe we were both on Vancouver.
Were you?
Yeah.
Was I?
I know I was.
Yeah, sure.
So, Adam, if you pick Vancouver, are you sticking with them?
I don't want to. I would love to see Edmonton do it. I think it'd be neat. You know, they've got all sorts of firepower. If they can just, you know, as long as Neil Yakupov doesn't offend anybody too greatly, I think that Edmonton has a legitimate chance in this shortened season with the youngsters that they've got and the talent that they've got to be able to take the Northwest.
Okay, Ross.
Vancouver is still going to win this division. It's what they do in the regular season. They find ways to win. They've got two red-hot goaltenders. I don't believe at this point that Roberto Luongo is on the verge of being moved, which leads me to believe he will be their starter once again because he's been the better goaltender. And you know what? He's the kind of guy who thrives off controversy. Vancouver has the best team in the division. It's not going to be that way for long, but it is that way for now. From top to bottom, I don't think you can really touch their depth. I really like what Zach Cashin's doing with the Sedins right now. That guy's a for-real player. You talk about the ultimate win-win trade. When you look at what Cody Hodgson's doing in Buffalo right now, and you look at what the Canucks are getting from Zach Cashin, that was genius on the part of both GMs there. Both of these guys really pulling the trigger on a deal that made their clubs immediately better and significantly better up the middle. I haven't seen any reason from Vancouver to think they can't do it other than, and I never thought I'd say this a little while ago, but other than Corey Schneider, there's no reason to think they couldn't do it. Right now, Luongo's got the hot hand, and you know what? Run with them. I like the team with the two all-star goaltenders to win this division.
I'm sticking with my pick.
Which was?
Minnesota Wild.
All right.
I'm sticking with
it's letter time.
And in a weird twist of whatever, I'm standing my original statement. The Oilers will not make the playoffs.
Ooh, really?
Yep. I'm standing by that.
Okay.
I'm not going to waver from that. I do not.
I think you're just trying to do reverse psychology thing.
I'm
going to
go out on a limb here and say that either that prediction or the one about Dubnyk winning the Vezina will not be correct. One of those will cancel the other out.
I don't think the Oilers are going to win enough. I don't know. Seeing what Anaheim's done this year, seeing what I still think L.A. is going to come back and be a stronger team as the season goes on, I think they have shown enough right now. Yeah, great. They're sitting at 4-2, and they've won a couple games here and there. They beat Colorado 4-1, but had absolutely no business doing so. They beat Phoenix last night, had no business doing that. They barely squeaked out a win in Edmonton against LA in what still has to be the worst ref game of all time. I think there's been
a few candidates for that this year.
Oh, that game
year
the
before.
First. I think the first period had 17 minutes of power play time. It was disgusting. I think there has been enough shown so far. This team is not good enough defensively. They still have no idea what the hell they're doing in their own end. And for whatever anybody wants to say about them, I don't think they're good enough offensively.
I think injuries could be an issue in Edmonton. I think talent-wise, they're good enough offensively.
I think they're stacked enough to one point where it's like, right now, looking at the way they play, they're not taking enough shots. And until that changes, they're not going to do a damn thing.
Interesting.
They do not shoot on net. They really don't shoot. But right now, 10 minutes away from end of the show. So how about you guys say we get to some listener emails?
All right. I like that we have people who both listen and can type.
I know.
I think we're moving up in the world.
We're ahead of the game.
All we got last year was angry Russian phone calls.
See, that's the thing. I have these emails in front of me. Not all of them can type.
Typed with a heavy Russian accent.
We're going to start with actually one for you guys. This is from Sam in Dorval. Hey guys, longtime listener, first time emailer. I'm a big Habs fan, and I'm wondering something. Louis LeBlanc does not seem to have a spot in the lineup this year. What's up with that? When he was drafted, I swear some media coverage made him out to be the next Guy Lafleur, not Guillaume Latendresse.
Typical Montreal typical future francophone Montreal superstar. They hyped him up because he was French. I mean, he had a lot of potential. He showed a lot of goodness in coming up, but they just overhyped him, and the guy just wasn't able, or so far has not been able, to live up to the hype that was made up for him, I think.
Yeah, I think when Louis LeBlanc entered the Canadiens' talent pool, he entered in the shallow end. We've seen a lot of very valuable resources come into this organization over the last couple of years. Gallagher has developed immensely during his time in Hamilton. I think we're seeing that this year. Galchenyuk was obviously not in the mix at all when Louis LeBlanc was dubbed the next great thing to come up to the Montreal system. I think what you're seeing is a guy who realistically had potential as a speed guy, a character guy. He's a grinder. He might be a very good second line player at his ceiling. He might be not in the NHL as a bottom. I think he's too small to come in as a straight grinder, and unless he really finds his offensive touch, he could be buried in this Canadian system. I like Louis LeBlanc. He's a great interview. I had the chance to meet him on a couple of occasions, but realistically, he's not much bigger than me. And if you're not able to light the lamp at that size, you're not going to have a place in today's NHL.
Current AHL statistics, by the way, 2 goals, 4 assists in 27 games.
Well, there you go. I mean, that says it all, right? Where's the jump? Where's the flair? I don't think this organization gave up on Louis. I think Louis got buried somewhere in the organization.
Pretty much. So, hey, Sam, thanks for emailing in.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sam. Keep them coming, Sam.
This one here is from Billy in OKC.
Billy?
Yeah. Hey, guys, love the show. This is more a question for James, but K-Ross, I'd like to know what you think about it, too. Adam, no mention of you. Barons recently signed Jonathan Chichu to a tryout contract, and he's played 3 games with the club now. If he has a good season and proves himself, could he make it back to the NHL with the Oil? He is a former MVP after all. No, I don't think so. That's my answer, straight up. He was second in scoring with Peoria last year in the AHL. He's been kicking around down there. But so far from what I've seen from him, he is a pretty good AHL player.
He was second in league scoring in the AHL last year?
No, he was second on his team in Peoria with 25 goals last year, and I forget how many assists.
No, Chishu will not. I just had to do a little bit of research here. If Chishu was a center, maybe they could bring him up in a third-line capacity because you need that kind of versatility at center. You need a guy who's been there. You need a guy who can score goals, who can maybe roll into another lineup. If you're just looking for a winger, trust me, I am one. We're pretty replaceable. You just need some speed up and down the boards, and you're not going to bring in a 32-year-old player to provide that on a team as young as Edmonton. I think best-case scenario with Chishu going to OKC, you're probably looking at a depth trade. Maybe Edmonton gets a draft pick out of it if he performs well, and there's a team coming into the playoffs that needs a guy. If you're looking at a situation for injury, you're looking at a tradable commodity. I don't think you're looking at the kind of player who can play his way up through a system as deep as Edmonton's is right now.
Yeah, the way I see it, if he was able to put up 25 in Peoria last year and he deserved a shot in the NHL, maybe someone would have done it this year. But I think he's done for the big time. I don't think we see him back in an NHL jersey anytime ever.
James, you'll love this. Would you like to know what Chichu's scouting report said the year he was drafted?
Sure.
Here's a quote. San Jose was criticized for picking a lackluster forward who, quote, skated slower forward than most players skate backwards.
Yep, dude still scored like 56 goals one year.
Yeah, I mean, hey, standing next to Joe Thornton will do amazing things in the regular season.
All right, next email here. You guys are going to love this one. I know I got a chuckle when it came in. This one's from Jean-Guy in Quebec.
Oh, it's our old friend.
Allo, you stupid Anglos. Long time talk. Tell me, you dirty Anglos. Les Coyotes, they keep tries to team in the desert. Why? Why is wrong with my Ville de Quebec? We have the passion. On a la monnaie. Bring back No Nordique.
Adam?
In order to have an NHL team, you must first be worthy of an NHL team.
Oh, man.
I went there.
Thin phone call.
Building a $400 million NHL arena does not an NHL franchise make. Just because it's there does not mean they will come. Quebec, it would be awesome to have another team in Quebec. Bettman will never let it happen, at least not moving the Coyotes there, because if anything, they'll go to Toronto where they can have yet another thing to talk about or whatever. But no, I don't think they will ever move Phoenix to Quebec City. It just isn't going to happen. Sorry, nope. John.
I'm actually with Jean-Guy on this one.
Was that?
I'm actually with Jean-Guy on this one.
Zut alors.
get an audio clip of that. You may never hear that sentence again.
I'm sure he's a big fan of you right now.
Well, that's all right. Look, the fact of the matter is, our old friend is correct. There is absolutely no point in having a team in the desert that is drawing 8,000 fans per game when the minimum requirement for Winnipeg to have a team was to sell 15,000 seats for every game.
5 years in advance.
The fact of the matter is, if you put a team in Quebec City, it will draw more revenue and advertising dollars. It will draw more television dollars. It will draw more fan attention. It will draw more media coverage. It will draw more everything. And the fact of the matter is, it is a much better location than Phoenix. There may be a better location right now in Seattle and or Hamilton, but if you want to compare Quebec City to Phoenix, Quebec City wins.
Well, yeah.
hey, you know, Quebec City, love to see them have a team. And I have no idea why they're still trying that Phoenix thing.
Gary Bettman will never, ever, ever admit that he's
wrong.
Because
Gary Bettman is heavily invested with NHL money in the shopping district surrounding the Glendale Arena.
Yeah. But
that is why. That's why he needs 2 decades.
This latest setback seriously has to be kind of the – it's got to be – got to be the thing that breaks the camel's back on this one.
That is
So we've got like 30 seconds left, but it's okay because we're going to go a little bit over time. So if you're listening live right now, it's probably going to cut out. But if you're listening to this recorded on the Friday or any day afterwards, from recent experience, it does usually let us go over a little bit of time because I really want to get to this question because it's awesome. This one's from Boris in Mother Russia. It says, "Hey, you off crossbar guys, this Boris from Russia. What I want to tell me is why is Ovechkin not number one? I hear Shark Marlowe is number one. Why no Ovechkin? Why no Malkin? Mother Russia misses her boys. Long live Yakupov. Keep up the good work. In Russia, crossbar off you."
All right, then. I like it.
So what's up with Ovechkin and what's up with Malkin and why in the hell is a dude named Marlowe the best player in the league right now?
Well, I'll break it down simply. There's absolutely nothing wrong with Evgeny Malkin. He's finding his chemistry. It's going to take a little bit of time. He's got Sid back in the lineup. It's hard to manage going from being the spotlight to not quite being that guy. It's a brand new dynamic. It's going to take some time. Ovechkin is not number one right now because he's a one-trick pony. He brings a ton of speed down the boards. He cuts to the center and he takes the wrist shot, unless he's coming down the other boards, in which case he cuts to the center, toe drags, and takes the wrist shot. And then if he doesn't have the puck, he parks himself in Mario Lemieux's office at the side of the net and waits for that one-timer or waits for that play. The fact of the matter is he needs to evolve his game. Ovechkin could very well return to number one. He has all the physical attributes. That shot is a cannon. He skates 100 miles an hour. He turns on a dime. I mean, he is a very, very talented hockey player. But he's got to rearrange that thought process. Luckily, if there's anybody who has ever put on a pair of skates who sees open ice and knows how to get to it, it's the Washington Capitals' new head coach, Adam Oates. If anybody can give this guy advice on where to be and when to be there so that the puck finds him, it's Adam Oates. Adam Oates had ways of putting the puck in places other guys didn't know they were going to be yet so that they could score. He's got the potential. Right now, Patrick Marlowe is just the recipient of a red-hot line. And he's not the best player in hockey right now, but Boris is correct. It is also very much so not Alex Ovechkin. I'm not so certain that it's not Evgeny Malkin. He might just be having an off week.
Adam?
I think it's just time for some Canadians to get back up into the top, man. I mean, hey, let us have a little bit of fun with it. It's not going to last. It's San Jose. Ovechkin is frickin' Ovechkin, and Malkin is frickin' Malkin. They're going to start scoring more and doing their thing. They're electrifying, exciting, awesome hockey players. You are right about Ovechkin being a little bit of a predictable player at times.
Are you kidding me? The book on Ovechkin is out, and it fits on the back of a cereal box.
Right, and so...
Tonight, by the way.
What?
He scored tonight.
Yeah, there you go. You know, make a goal, no problem. You know, it's good stuff, man. Boris, don't worry, my friend. Your Russian compatriots will start scoring, and all will be well in the world.
Maybe it's the hockey gods getting back at Ovechkin for dancing like a fool over his stick. Maybe Yakupov should keep one eye open when he sleeps at night.
For the record, the Capitals lost to the Leafs tonight, 3-2. After leading 2-1 going into the third period, outshot 40-22 by the Maple Leafs.
The Leafs haven't taken 40 shots in a season in a half a decade.
That's a pretty crazy note right there. I think Alexander Ovechkin, as the dominant player he was, is over.
Oh, absolutely. I said he's a one-trick pony.
I don't think he's going to be able to modify his game to be that guy ever again.
Not unless he's willing to go to physical areas. If he's willing to use that speed and that aggression to crash into the crease, then fine. But he'll never be that dominant player by breaking down the boards again.
Yeah. Whoever said the book is out and everybody's got a copy, I'm totally down with that. I believe
Vanek got a hat trick tonight.
There you go. Hey, Thomas Vanek, he's been tearing it up lately.
Word up.
So I think that's it. I don't have any more emails unless you guys got any over there.
That's all.
You've got the inbox, man.
That seems to be it for the show, which means that theme music went on way too loud.
That deafening theme music. Awesome.
I know. But hey, guys, that's it for the show. Thanks so much for showing up this week, K-Ross.
Hey, thank you. Hey, I had big things on the go. Big things.
The big things. He was too cool for school last week.
What up, George?
Adam, hey, pretty good show tonight, man.
Thanks, little buddy.
And me, fantastic as always.
We'll see you on the pond, James. Bring your wooden stick and your beard.
Yeah. Do you guys want to give that info out one more time?
Yeah, absolutely. That is the Montreal Outdoor Pond Hockey Festival going on in Kirkland this week, right?
Lachine, on the water in Lachine. There's not a lot of waterfront in Kirkland. It's going to take place near the Dairy Queen in Lachine at the old brewery, which is very appropriate because it's sponsored by a beer company, Moosehead, the Alpine Brewery. Good time.
Come check us out. We'll be the young guys in the division. Too old for us, but still losing.
Yep. And also, big thank you once again to our benefactor, backsportspage.com. And don't forget to go check out www.offthecrossbar.com. And always remember that is crossbar with a K. Anything else is uncivilized.
All I know is when I was asked to play, after I agreed, I was given the question, are you by any chance 30? I was like, no. Like, all right, just look 30 when you get there.
No problem. Bring your beard.
You've been doing it for 15 years, James.
I told my wife that when I got home, and she's like, well, you've already got the gray hair.
So. Oh, there you go. I won't look like I fit in the 30 division for another 15 years, so don't worry about it.
That is true. That's it for another show. We didn't get to the baby report tonight, but K-Ross, baby report?
7 weeks and counting, my friend.
There we go. That should be all kinds of fun.
Oh, it will be.
Thank you so much for listening. My name is James, K-Ross and Adam. You guys are over there. We'll see you again next week. I promise, by the time the next show goes live next week, there will be at least one entry in my new ongoing feature, Stranger in a Familiar World. It's going to be a fun read. Wait until you hear me rip into the guys who do commentary for the Phoenix Coyotes.
There's nothing worse than somebody else's homer.
It was a blast last night. I don't think I've ever heard anybody refer to him as Adam Hall so many times. So thanks for joining us, everybody. It's been a blast. Thanks for listening. You guys have just gone. And, of course, the sound effect ain't going to play. Adam, you want to do it for us?
Ching! Off the crossbar.